Good morning. When we speak of complete freedom, what we're speaking of is complete, absolute mental and physical freedom. And that is completely available to everyone within one's own experience, whatever that is. There's nothing about one's experience that needs to change in order to conclusively realize that freedom. As long as we persist in any way thinking that there's something that needs to change within our experience in order to conclusively realize that freedom, then we'll never realize that freedom. If we continually try to shift from one thought to other thoughts that are going to be better or less painful, or emotions that are less painful or better, try to seek circumstances that are going to change the thoughts and emotions, or exchange one experience for another, then we'll spend our whole life running from one perception to another, from thought to thought, emotion to emotion, and experience to experience, trying to rearrange those perceptions to make them into a better skill set of perceptions. Does everyone understand what I'm saying? Now, what happens when we experience complete mental and physical freedom that is absolute in nature is that we attain something that's already present. And what we attain is complete mastery over all phenomena. Now, the words phenomena, perception, and points of view are all synonymous. In order to attain that complete mastery over all phenomena, all that is required is to refine our perception. That's it. All human living is perceiving. That's it. Have you ever seen a pupil dilate that goes from very small to very open? Or from very open to very small? Well, the refinement of perception can be illustrated by what happens to that pupil. When the pupil is very small, it's like being closed in, locked in, having perception locked in on specific incidents or points of view within complete perceptual openness. So it's taking complete perceptual openness, which is already present, and locking it in on one point or several points within that perception. And the refinement of perception, refining perception, is simply to relax those fixed reference points within perception. Is that understood? So the refining of perception is simply the relaxing of perception into already available, accessible, and ever-present complete perceptual openness. So when I repeatedly suggest rest repeatedly for short moments many times until it becomes automatic, that is all that I'm suggesting. Allow that refining of perception to take place. Now, the languages of the world today are very, very limited in the contemporary languages other than Tibetan Buddhism or Tibetan. Tibetan is the only contemporary language that has kept alive non-doer speech. So that's the only language today that has non-doer speech. There are ancient languages. The most noted of those is Sanskrit, that is based entirely on non-doer speech. Tibetan is another language that is based entirely on non-doer speech. So many of the things that we read about from other languages like Sanskrit and Tibetan, that we try to interpret through dualist language as their framework, we completely misinterpret. So we hear a word like Buddha, and we think that to achieve Buddhahood means that we have to get somewhere. So we interpret it through dualist language, and we say, well, that means that somebody achieved this great state of complete mastery over all phenomena. And in order to do that, it required that they change from one thing into another. That this Buddha person had to change all their thoughts and emotions and experiences from non-Buddha thoughts, emotions, and experiences into Buddha thoughts, emotions, and experiences. But that isn't what happens, and that isn't what the word Buddha means in non-Buddha language, such as Sanskrit or Tibetan. The Sanskrit word Buddha has two roots that are combined together into one word. And in Tibetan, that word is called Sangyang. That is the label that is applied to it. And what this word means is the simultaneous exhaustion of faults and perfection of qualities. So these two are not things that are separated into a doer who's going to a destination called Buddhahood. But within the context of one's own experience in the refining of perception, the underlying and already present Buddha qualities, enlightened qualities, wisdom qualities, metta qualities of being human are refined and realized. See, they're already present. Complete control over all phenomena is already present, and it's already present within one's own experience. So when we relax our tight hold on any kind of description, say anger, and an elaboration of just that particular example, anger into something in particular, when we elaborate that, then we get lost in the pinpointed field of perception that is trying to look at anger through a dualist framework and attribute causes to the results of anger. When we completely relax perception and the need to elaborate all the descriptions about the experience of anger, what happens is we find that the anger resolves in and of itself. What happens is it dissolves into its own ground of complete perceptual openness. That's all the refining of perception is. But if we wrestle that anger to the ground and try to analyze it and attribute causes to it, then we aren't refining our perception. It's as simple as that. So this is why, and I hope that everyone understands this, and if you don't, please ask a question. This is why it is of paramount importance not to try to change your thoughts, emotions, your experiences in any way if your goal is to refine perception. Because whatever your perceptions are, the circumstantial perceptions of your own life, that's all you have to work with. That's it. It all occurs only within those own perceptions. And each one of those perceptions is a wish-fulfilling jewel. So you can make a whole world out of it. You can make a whole dualist world of pain and suffering and psychology and philosophy and good and evil and bad guy and good guy or bad girl and good girl. You can bad country and good country. You can do whatever you want with it. It's a wish-fulfilling jewel. But in order to realize the treasury of that wish-fulfilling jewel, the treasury in which that wish-fulfilling jewel is contained, then it requires completely relaxing into the basic space of perceptual openness. The basic space of phenomena is that totally relaxed, perceptually open ground of all experience. And thus no experience whatsoever needs to change. If you insist with yourself that experience needs to change in order to refine perception, it'll just make the road a lot longer. And it's very likely that the destination that's been set out for will never be arrived at. So just relax. No matter what appears and no matter what kind of a compulsive, obsessive force you might feel within yourself to describe it or seek something in it, don't. There isn't anything there. All to be found of any value whatsoever is the completely open space of the ground of that perception. There's nothing else to be found there that's of any value, meaning, or significance. The greatest wisdom that has ever been within humankind is in this ground of complete perceptual openness. So I hope I've cleared that up. It's impossible to refine perception with dualist speech. So to listen to things, read things, or experience things that are trying to shift experiences around to make them better or more wise, it just will never lead anywhere. I don't know what to say other than saying it's a fool's game. It really is a fool's game. No matter how strong the force of whatever you've learned to describe is within you, all these big emotional things that we've learned to describe as panic, anxiety, impending doom, impending death, any of these things that feel like they could definitely take over our life and snuff us out. Have you ever had feelings like that within you? It's only the description that makes them seem like they can do that. The ground of being can never be snuffed out. It can never be snuffed out. To relax completely into that ground of being guarantees that you will realize that can never be snuffed out. You'll realize that can never be snuffed out and that doesn't depend on any description. Any description at all that appears within it. So the ground of being isn't dependent on the universe or galaxies or the cosmos or a theory of everything or anything else that can be contrived. The ground of being is not dependent on the earth or fire or air or water or space or anything else. Now, none of that can be arrived at in a fully realized way through intellectual scrutiny. It's absolutely impossible that it be arrived at through intellectual scrutiny. It can only be arrived at in the complete relaxation of being. The ultimate metaphor, the supreme symbol is basic space. And that basic space is inseparable from awareness. The idea that awareness is generated by beings is just silly. You know, it's a primitive superstition, that's all it is. Throughout all of time within humankind, there have always been those who know that awareness is inseparable from basic space. It simply is. Anything that appears within it is due to that awareness, period. When we just relax, that becomes more obvious to us. Now, you know, I've mentioned the supreme symbol, the ultimate metaphor, basic space. But within our own contemporary society, we're coming up with all kinds of metaphors about that complete openness, like the internet or electronic fields in which communication occurs. Terms like open source, these are all just completely open with no need to look at things in conventional ways. That's how they all came about. The internet came about through not looking at things in conventional ways. Electronic fields of communication that are completely united and in which there doesn't even have to be any face-to-face contact for communication to occur. These are very powerful symbols about the ground of our own being. Yet we who have exercised the material powers to manifest these things, we need to catch up within ourselves with the direct experience of what we're manifesting. So just relax. You know, these inventions we have today, I can guarantee you 10 or 15 years from now, they will look silly. They really will look silly. It's just like today, FTPing files or the Mosaic browser, they look silly. Or, you know, like when I first started using the internet when it was ARPANET in the early 70s, that seemed so advanced. Oh, gosh, it was just the latest, the greatest, the best. It could never get any better than that. And now today what we're doing is amazing. So please, you know, I invite you and really I beg you to catch up. If you haven't already, just relax. The same kind of thinking that allowed these inventions to occur is exactly what will give you complete freedom within your own being. The relaxed thinking that allows all kinds of new ideas to come about is the permanent reality of your own being. It's not just some crazy insight that pops through. Refining perception is not something mysterious or esoteric. It is training. Training in the refinement of perception. This is exactly what it's been called wherever it's worked. Refinement of perception is a training. It's a training. We've trained ourselves to close on all the points of view within the perceptual field. And we train ourselves to reverse that process. That's all we do. And how do we do that? We do that in the immediacy of our own experience, whatever that is. We don't do it by trying to adopt someone else's experiences. We do it within our own experience, our own thoughts, our own emotions, and whatever seems to be inner and outer. We just completely relax instead of diving into the descriptions, the need to conventionally describe everything. No matter how safe we may or may not feel in the world based on all these descriptions that have been contrived, I can guarantee you you'll feel a lot safer in just relaxing the death grip on the dictionary. If we throw the dictionary into a linear accelerator, we'll see that it's all space. So then we know the ultimate meaning of all the words in the dictionary. Are there any questions?
In the mastery over all phenomena, how I'm experiencing freedom as a phenomena, rising as awareness. So if I wake in the morning very cold, if I'm resting, then there's freedom as whatever is occurring. And there's no need to control it. But you also mentioned mastery in controlling all phenomena. Are they synonymous in that if you're rested, as whatever arises, then freedom and control maybe are one thing, because there's no necessity to change bodies.
They're not to, let's put it that way, they're not to.
So in terms of, I guess then resting, allowing, I guess, beneficial intent to rise, when, because the proliferation of points of view ceases. So, as I'm experiencing it, that freedom and control is just disappointing.
It's, they're not to. It's just like the exhaustion of faults and the perfection of qualities are not two. It all occurs within the same reality. In a perception that's taken to be something, then there's the need to go into it and build a whole worldview based on it. In the complete relaxation of the necessity of doing that, it opens up what is for most people an unknown reality. So it's a reality that's already existing, it's just never been experienced before. Or if it has been experienced, it's been fleeting. Now, what is guaranteed is that once you recognize that ground within yourself, which is it's a very easy thing to do. It's not a difficult thing to do because it's already present. It is only made to seem difficult when it is looked at as being a destination. Do you understand what I'm saying? Then it's difficult because it seems like there's a road of 10,000 miles or longer going somewhere and you're traveling it. But when the ground of your being is experienced right here and you only know that it's in the return to that ground that it becomes more obvious, then it's very easy. Then it's all just up to you. It's a matter of returning to that ground again and again. And as long as you do, it will become more and more obvious. And the more obvious it becomes, the more confidence you'll have in it. A profound indwelling confidence, like no confidence you've ever had before. A confidence that pervades all of your life. And then from within that, complete mental freedom will come about. And then from that complete mental freedom will come the exhibition of remarkable qualities and activities. So it's very straightforward. It's a matter of training. And it's a much easier matter of training than probably just about anything you've learned. So, you know, when a lot of us here have gone to school, and so we've at least learn to study things and look at the world in a dualistic way. That's a lot of work. Because what we were born like this, perception wide open and spacious, and then through training we learn to dice everything up. And so this is why the dualistic learning is so effortful. We go to school. Most of us don't want to be there. But some of us have enough grit, enough guts, that we can make ourselves stay there and learn everything. And then we're considered to be the good ones. When probably the most normal person there is the one who doesn't want to have anything to do with it and can't take it. So that's a lot of hard work. That's what I'm pointing out there. Now, when we just completely relax, then that we enter the reality of no more learning. It's a reality in which everything is already known. So then that makes anything that we might want to do within that reality, anything we might want to invent or write or come up with, much easier. If we want to learn something like quantum physics or mathematics that is beyond the beyond, then we have, it's much easier to do that from perceptual openness. That's where great inventions come about. They don't come about by obsessively rearranging conventional ways of looking at things. And as any of you who have known me for a while know, I feel that this is critical to the current state of the human species. We really need to evolve beyond these closed and fixed frames of reference for everything in order to survive. It's not only a wisdom imperative, but it's an imperative of the survival of the species and the planet. So, you know, what's always been talked about is this esoteric, mysterious thing that you have to run away to India and renounce your whole life and forget about all the creepy people you've known. The greatest chance you have of realizing the nature of your own being is staying with those creepy people and just relaxing.
When you say refinement, you always mean relaxing and nothing else.
That's all I mean. Yeah. Refinement is, it's not like taking a wheelbarrow from here down to the Ganga and filling it up with stones and from the bottom of the Ganga and then trying to get it back up the hill. That's not what refining is. It's complete relaxation in all perception. And this is why for those who are really fixed in on conceptual frameworks and a lot of doing, it seems too easy. It just seems too easy. It just doesn't seem that the most exalted of all ways of being human could come about in such an easy way. However, that's the only way it's ever come about in anyone who's exhibited truly profound mastery and power over all phenomena, which is synonymous with all the things that we like most in life, like wisdom, love, complete well-being, supreme intelligence, superb healthfulness, mutual enrichment. It's synonymous with all those things. Brief, complete relaxation. When we look at a historical figure, say Buddha, in this case, and we see someone like Buddha, what most of us say is, Buddha, good boy, me, bad boy. That kind of thing. Me, bad boy, gotta get to be like Buddha, good boy. So then we try to figure out what Buddha's qualities and characteristics are and contrive them in our own being, whether we're a man or a woman. But that's not what Buddha did. After Buddha tried everything else, all he did was sit down and relax while everything fired up within him. Everything he'd been trying to neutralize, his lust, his anger, his jealousy, his deep remorse and regret for having left his wife and family and his parents and totally abandoned them, totally abandoning them. When he just relaxed and allowed all that to be as it is, then he realized the true nature of reality within that, as that, not in all the other things he had tried. He tried three other approaches and none of them worked. He just felt more miserable than ever until finally through a practice of asceticism, he nearly killed himself by starving himself to death and sitting in a cold cave too long. So he had tried these different approaches, and I just mentioned one of them, but others he had tried was that he had tried a teaching where he was to be celibate and live in solitude and that kind of thing. So he did that, you know, he left his family and that sort of thing, lived in solitude, and became celibate and had some disciples. And then he decided that that wasn't really what he needed to do. So he went to another teacher, and that teacher said, no, you know, what you need to do is you need to replace all the negative thoughts you have with positive thoughts, and you need to replace all your negative emotions with positive emotions. And so he tried that too, but that didn't work either. That didn't lead anywhere. He just felt as miserable as ever, and he knew there was more. He knew there was a lot more. So then he tried this practice of complete physical and mental austerity, just completely getting away from everything and starving himself and putting himself through all kinds of torture till he was nearly dead and was very sick. Then he knew that wasn't it either, so then he sat under the tree, just relaxed. He wasn't doing some kind of extreme thing. He wasn't saying, now everybody in the world do this. Just sit down and either close your eyes or leave them open, and if you sit there long enough, something's going to happen. This is a means to an end. That isn't what was taught at all. What was taught was that no matter what appears, and he called that Mara. So he called all of, that was just the word used at the time. Today we say afflicted states, disturbing states, and same thing as Mara. He just sat there, and he didn't try to do anything with it. He didn't try to avoid it, didn't try to announce it, didn't try to accept it either, didn't try to replace it with anything else. So, you know, I can talk about him, but I know that from within my own experience, the same thing is true. And I know that from the experience of others, that the same thing is true. If you try to change anything that's going on, you will either prolong your course or never get there. So no matter how tweaked you feel by whatever's going on inside you or outside you, just relax. Relax completely. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to attach to any of the ideas you have about what this total freedom is that you've read about in books. It's all within your own experience. Trust your own experience and the complete freedom that is the ground of every single perception. You really look relaxed today. But
you don't have to go for solitude. But it's not that liking for solitude or desire, you can say, for solitude. Is it something like side effect or byproduct of the practices, the spiritual practices? Is a person will automatically develop or enjoy solitude once he goes into spiritual practices, irrespective of whether that is fair or not, or it is, or let me put it another way, it is not that we first should go for solitude and then put in the practices, other spiritual practices. It is other way around. Once we follow the spiritual practices, the liking for solitude automatically comes. Or another way, if a person is going on a right path, there is an indication on barometer for measurement of his progress. That is what this said. Could you please comment on this?
I can only think of it euphemism. That is what I want to say. Bullshit. what happens is just the point of view of solitude comes up. So you see, the more you relax, the more subtle the perceptions come. And maybe your perceptions before have been all about being involved in the world, being with everybody, but the more you relax, then you have a whole new set of perceptions that come up. And one of them might be solitude, but that's the point of view. When it's only a point of view. When the true nature of phenomena is realized, then solitude becomes obsolete. There's no need whatsoever for solitude or anything else, any other extreme. Now, if you just simply look at it as a choice you've made rather than something that's leading somewhere, then that would be great. But if you look at it as necessary to your freedom, then that's a prison.
Yes, that's what it means. It is not a necessary thing. Comes about automatically. Am I pushing too much?
You are, because what I sense in this is something you've heard from someone else.
Experienced someone.
Uh-huh. You've experienced it, but you've also heard it from someone else who has, yeah, uh-huh. But, you know, just look to yourself and really, now for you, you are a person, Anil, who has great openness. You have great open-mindedness. And you've exhibited this in your life through your work and many other ways. So for you, you have a perfect disposition to realize the fullness of your true nature, the full evidence of your true nature. And for that to occur, nothing is necessary. No change whatsoever in your circumstances is required at all.
Each and every great master, including Buddha, has been in solitude at one point or another.
There are a lot of interpretations about what great masters have done. That's true. But, you know, those are just interpretations. It's just like the stories we've heard about the Buddha. We then interpret these through our own filters. And we say, oh, they must have had to do something really arduous and difficult, and it looks like this is what they did. But we don't really know that. All we really know about Buddha was that eventually he had to just sit down and totally relax and come to terms with everything going on within himself. He just had to give it free rein, whatever it was, his scariest thoughts, his best thoughts, his most lustful thoughts, every fantasy he'd ever had. He just had to let it all have free rein. And that's when he realized his true nature. I know that from my own experience, the same thing is true. When we refine our perception, then we really want to take that all the way. We don't just want to have somebody's idea about what it is. We want to take it all the way in terms of our own perception. So if we get locked in on ideas about what different historical figures have done, then it really limits our own perceptual openness. But if you just stay with your own experience, all the thoughts and emotions you're having, and you don't try to avoid any kind of upset in your life that's come about due to changes you've made in relation to different people in your life and that kind of thing. And you just let all the thoughts and emotions about all of those things have free rein and completely relax while all that's occurring without any need to change anything or do anything about it. Do you understand?
Yes.
Do you have any more questions at all about that? I understand that you've made a recent change and taken a course of action, but you don't now have to prove that that's the right thing.
I'm not trying to prove that.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to prove it to anyone.
Okay, good. I just want you to let everything go within your perceptual field. Don't try to neutralize anything in any way. Just let the full force of all the thoughts that are there and the emotions that are there and the experiences that are there to have breathing. Don't avoid any of them. Face everything and just relax. That's the ultimate meditation. If we want to look at any of these methods that are supposed to lead somewhere, that's the ultimate meditation. The ultimate yoga is this complete rest in the immediacy of all perceptions. The ultimate mantra is the self-sound of basic space that resounds everywhere. That's the ultimate mantra. The ultimate deity is the self-appearance of basic space as it is, as everything.
Just like to check and see if I'm understanding this or mm-hmm. the right track. I hear that I should rest. It's almost as if the learning goes, I need to rest now. And so there's like this effort to rest. But then as I look, it's more like resting is what is already there. Resting is really what is.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to clear that up. At least for that part of myself that seems to panic every time somebody says do something like rest or I shouldn't be resting or trying to rest or any of these things, it seems like it almost, then I go, oh no, I'm not resting.
Well, if you don't need to try to rest, then you know that. Mm-hmm. You know that absolutely. And it isn't that everyone needs to rest. For some people, it's more refining perception, or another way to look at it is attunement into what's real. It comes about through the dawning of conviction. So, for example, maybe you're not trying to rest at all, but you just keep coming here. And in coming here, your perception becomes more and more refined. But whatever it is, easy. Just to be able to develop great enthusiasm for this is enough. If you want to develop something, that's something to develop. Just great enthusiasm for the complete luxury of your own being.
Well, I have the privilege to follow your teaching over the last couple of days. My personal impression is that I followed actually different languages. One language is for me is very, very easy and easy to go along with. You speak about going back to the ground and open to to arrive or to be at perception openness. I do subscribe to this, no doubt about it. But, now this word, but, of course, is lively words. Whenever you use the word pure space, then it immediately provokes in me a tiny little bit of what I learned about relativity of time and space and existence and non-existence of time and space and all this. So whenever you use those words, space, pure space, absolute space, and everything resting in space, then I really do have some problems with the language or, the perception you use. And perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on the difference, or of course it is the unity of going back to the ground, and then again using this, at least as I feel, it's totally different other language.
Just rest. and the two will come together. The space is used as a symbol, so it's the ultimate metaphor or supreme symbol that describes the timeless ground. And when you just relax in perceptual openness, who you take yourself to be loosens up. So instead of taking yourself to be only this finite body, man, person, the spaciousness of your being becomes much more obvious. It isn't defined so much by somebody who's sitting here, somebody who's born, and somebody who will die. That becomes the least of your concerns. Now, some people don't like it when I talk about things as pure or originally pure or wholly positive or beneficial. It really gets their goat, you know. They don't like to hear about stuff like that. Because what it usually brings up within people is that their own feelings of feeling impure, bad, or negative, or not positive. So it isn't so much those terms that I'm using, but it kind of stirs things up inside. The big no that says, oh no, I'm not pure, I'm not beneficial, I'm not wise, I'm not all of these things. So I call these the big no. But when I use the word pure space, or the wholly positive beneficial ground of being, what I'm referring to is that the expanse of the ground of being is stainless, it's flawless, it's never been made into anything other than what it is, even though there may be all kinds of labels that describe all kinds of things. Essentially, all they are is originally pure and flawless. So we can only realize that in the refinement of our own perception. But not perception as we've learned about it in terms of neurobiology. These don't have anything to do with awareness. You know, what sees in a dream at night?
Yeah, but that's one question without drawing you into a space that might be perceived as an opinion from the outside. But something like, the very least, but then it could be something like vegetarianism. Does it really matter? That's what I'm suggesting as an answer to the question.
Does it matter as some kind of absolute truth, or...?
Yes.
What do you think?
I would say no.
Okay. Well, let's approach it from a little bit different angle and just go back to my own experience. Now, when I was a young woman 25 years ago, I guess I'd heard of vegetarianism, but I wasn't a vegetarian. I'd heard of meditation, but I did not meditate. I had never meditated or tried that. And I may have heard of a guru, but it never occurred to me that would be anyone I would want to meet. And, you know, I may have read something that was non-dual, but it wasn't anything that I really wanted to explore or think about. What I did know in my own experience was that there was a ground of love in everything and an indivisibility. And I had known that since I was a child. So I didn't need any scientific explanations or philosophy books or anything like that. And my life was really ordinary in a lot of ways. I was young, you know, I wanted to succeed, I wanted to do good works, and I wanted to have a nice lifestyle and all of those sorts of things. And I did well at that, but I never felt that I did well enough, no matter how well I did. And I did quite well. I was named one of the outstanding young women in America, so that's how well I did. But even doing that well, I didn't feel I had done well enough. And so, you know, I felt that there was something very wrong with that. But I didn't feel that there was something wrong with me. Do you see what I mean? I knew that the question was beyond that. And so I entered a period of time where I felt really overwhelmed by everything that was going on within me. My circumstances, all the choices I've made, everything I've been thinking, the way I tried to sort things out intellectually and emotionally, none of it just seemed to be leading anywhere. And I was young, so that was scary. That was really scary that all these frameworks of reality that I put together weren't providing any well-being whatsoever. So when I just faced all that within me, this incredible turmoil, hopelessness, powerlessness, even terror, bewilderment, paranoia, huge feelings, and I just knew I couldn't do anything about them through any of the strategies I developed, then I suddenly realized that they all had the same ground and that they were all equal in that ground. So whether it was success or failure or looking good or looking bad or being the best or being the worst, that it was all absolutely equal, no matter what the description was. So that, for me, was that entire shift in perception, the opening up or refinement of my perception to seeing everything as indivisible, completely indivisible. So then, you know, from that vantage, things like doing anything to achieve something look totally absurd, like being a vegetarian in order to achieve refined perception. It just doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And sitting on a cushion and watching thoughts, emotions, and sensations arise and fall in order to get to a goal, none of that made any sense either. When it's so easily accessible within the context of everything that's occurring right here today, why add a lot of other things in to try to make it occur? You breathe, every single bit of it is filled with the same stuff as the plant you eat or the meat you eat. So in that sense, it's all equal. But in the moment that you try to decide that things aren't equal, that some things are better than others, then that's complete falling out of wisdom. The wisdom mind is the mind that knows everything is equal. Its wisdom comes from being beyond, completely beyond, but inclusive of all opposites. Wisdom itself is a ground of complete equality and evenness with no need to bifurcate, to divide, to split. You know what I'm talking about. And it's a big relief, isn't it?
probably a question I should bring to you, if I can't want to ask it. In the context of what you're describing there, I feel I fully resonate with that. And yet I've had a lot of food issues in my life, and I can't help ask why the organic soy milk, how does that come about as a way of being a benefit, yet it still doesn't matter. That's not a bit of a talk in that context.
Just relax. I didn't say anything about the soy milk being beneficial or harmful or anything else. I just said I like organic soy milk. Yeah. In the same way Adrian might like some other substances, I like mainly soy milk. But you know, I didn't always like organic soy milk. When I was the age of Anad and Shah, I liked Stolichnaya, that's what I like. Vodka.
Okay. It's so amazing how points of view can be there and be so hidden. I was convinced that you said that soy milk, which you replied, is better than anything else. And you didn't say a word.
I'd just like to share that through resting, I've started moving to vegetarian all my life, for maybe 6-7 years or so. And I very rarely, occasionally I eat meat. But what I found is since resting, that I always have an issue, or used to have an issue, you know, it's wrong to eat meat. And now I totally accept that, but what I've found is I found myself rescuing spiders and flies in my bathroom from the water and things like that. You know, ridiculous things. You know, I've got these spiders in my flat and they're amazing. And I'm sort of taking care of them and making sure I know, you know, in the water in the shower, just about everything, tissues and spiders.
Hey, you know, I have the same lifestyle, Adrian. I do exactly the same thing. I think we can make a religion out of this. And we'll just say that if you've really realized your true nature, that this is what you do. Now, can you see how all this stuff came about? All right, thank you for a lovely morning.